Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
I wasn't sure if that was to me or the audience. What's up? I'm excited.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Blue Abroad Show. Monday, the 15th of April, 2024. I've got Lekdog with me, a.k.a. Alexi Does, a.k.a. Super Coach Demon, a.k.a. the Guru, the Fantasy Guru, a.k.a. How you going, mate?
Oh, mate, I'm pretty pumped. I'm pretty under the pump, but excited to be here on this wonderful Monday. We did talk when you asked me to be on the show about it being a 5-0 review. Unfortunately, couldn't quite get the win on the weekend, but I'm sure we'll cut that to pieces. Oh, man, life's good. Had an article go up this morning on Code Sports. If you do your Supercoach draft, check that out. Other than that, it's just painting, partying, and this is very minimal partying, to be honest. It's just watching Carlton.
Very good. Well, yeah, I did. Well, you know what? I got caught out this week. I got way too confident. I thought we'd be too good. I thought that the Crows would give us their best. I pretty much thought the game would play out the way it did up until there was 8 minutes 50 to go. I thought that's how the game would end. We would withstand their best. They would look awesome, the Crows, get their mojo back a bit, but we would just be a little bit too good. And unfortunately, the remaining 8 minutes and 50 seconds had to play out. And now we're 4-1, and reality hits you that you're not invincible. And, you know, you got to get back to the fundamentals, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating. We're a better team than Adelaide. You get a couple of injuries, you make some bad errors, there's a bit of complacency throughout the team. All that adds up to choking a game that we probably didn't deserve to win until we were 3 goals up with however many minutes to go it was, 10 or 11 minutes, I can't remember. But yeah, just, I don't know, I don't feel nervous at games anymore. Last season kind of took that away from me, but I did... We were 2 goals up still and my heart started beating and I went, okay, this is, something's off here, and it seemed to be. But I bumped into you before the game started, and this was my take to anyone who asked me during the week. It's like Adelaide haven't kicked any goals this season yet. At some point, their forwards are going to kick goals, and it happened. They kicked goals and they kicked more accurately than we did, and we gave away goals that we probably shouldn't have. So in the end, we lost. But I don't know, Tez, if we lose this one, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, it's a 10-goal loss. We leave depressed. We get angry. The season's over. We're not doing it this year. But I don't know. It didn't have much effect on me, this loss.
Yeah. I know this is a Carlton channel, and I know that there will always be an element of Carlton bias here, but I thought it was a very entertaining game. Frustrating as a Carlton supporter because of the costly errors that we had made, particularly defensively from our senior guys. But all in all, if the criticism of the week before was that it was a boring slog, then this was, you know, for a neutral, it was entertaining. And I found myself enjoying the game really until that last, you know, 8 minutes, which was disappointing. It was disappointing to watch us get so much ascendancy in the fourth and lift and rise to the occasion and have all the special key moments, knowing we hadn't played well. But in a weird way, I'm kind of grateful that we didn't get away with it again, and that you feel the sting of a loss, because nothing humbles you more than a loss. You know, you can learn lessons in a win like we did last week, but nothing really brings you back down to earth like a loss. So from that point of view, in the grand scheme of things, I think it'll be beneficial for us to respond.
Yeah, look, I think it highlights what Vossi's mantra has been the whole time, which is we're a defensive team, which I always, when he first started, thought was crazy. I was like, we've got the best forward line or one of the best forward lines in the comp. What do you mean we're a defensive team? And then you see it play out where what was the score, 100-98 or whatever it was, and we lost, whereas we're winning games where it's a dour defensive sort of affair. And I just think we didn't defend well across the park, and that's the difference. Like, we scored 100 points, you can't really, or 98 points, you can't say that we didn't play offensively well, or we didn't score 28 scoring shots or whatever it was. But the fact that we didn't defend is the reason we lost, and that's why Vossi says we are a defensive team despite our offensive weapons.
Isn't it amazing? I would say the Carlton fans forgot how to deal with loss. And that's coming from us. That's all we've known.
It was a complete meltdown, wasn't it? It's the bloke sitting next behind me at the game. I don't know if he's ever been to a footy game before, but he was talking about how we're gutless and we're weak and we always do this. And I was just thinking, like, and we were up at this point in the game. It was in the start of the last quarter. And I was just like, we've won 15 out of the last 17. We finished top four and we played in a, you know, we almost made it. Well, not almost. One quarter into the prelim, we thought we were going to be in a grand final. I was like, things are pretty good compared to where I've come from. So, and then I got home and I left the game with a smile on my face. I don't like losing, Tez, but as you said, I thought it was an entertaining game. I was there with some friends and family. I was there with little Harry, who you met. He hasn't been to too many games. He was in tears. God bless him. He does not know pain. But yeah, I left. My night and my week wasn't ruined. But then I made the mistake of jumping on Twitter, and I guess we're the worst football club in the world, Derry, because that's how people acted.
Yeah, I mean, footy's an outlet for some, and you can never really tell people how to support. But I guess when you're on a platform that everyone's on, you're going to be exposed to it. Like it's difficult to get it back in your control of what you're viewing and what you're seeing. Tell you what, I'd hate to be a player after that game on Saturday, knowing what they've done for the last, you know, year. And then seeing everyone turn on them the way that they did.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you can tell people to support, and different people have different levels of emotional maturity. The middle of last year, footy combined with life, I was in a terrible place, and I hated it. I hated everything about it. I didn't want to do videos anymore, and I'd let it destroy my week, and then, you know, through a lot of work, been able to progress to that. But the joy that they gave me at the end of last year, Tez, knowing that we didn't get the ultimate goal, repaid every bad feeling I've had. And I think it kind of has broken me. Like, even in the Brisbane game, I wasn't upset or sad when we lost. Adelaide, I wasn't sad or upset when we lost. So for me personally, it'll take a lot of these sort of games before I can... they've earned my trust, and they've banked a few points, the boys. So that I've got their back until I've got a reason not to have it.
Leck dog, they can't kill me. I'm already dead.
Definitely.
I'm already dead, mate. I was already taken to the brink of everything. It would take probably 20 straight losses for me.
And even then, it might not. The thing that'll kill me, Tez, and I fear for your life as well, is when we win a flag, I think that's the thing that's going to kill me. I think I'll have just reached the pinnacle and it'll be like, wow, time to go. See you later. I don't see a loss killing me anytime soon.
Do you know what? We could win a flag. We could win a grand final by 22 points, and then someone somewhere will be like, should have been 26.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, we should have converted more in front of goal. 100%. Lock it in.
It is what it is. All right. Bumper show tonight, guys. We're going to go through round 5. We are going to talk about themes and issues, talk a bit about the injuries that have come up, whether or not it's just, I mean, it is piling up, but we'll get through it all. We're going to look ahead to round 6 against the Giants. Also, there is a very special announcement to make. I'm going to make it at the end of the show, but you will see in the live chat, if you are on YouTube, pinned to the top of the live chat is an entry form for a competition. We're giving away 2 free premium tickets to the game this week against the Giants, thanks to our new friends at Mr. Cabinets. So you'll hear more about it later in the show, but if you would like to go into the draw, it's a free entry competition. You just got to fill out your details, name, email and phone number. On Thursday during the team show, I'm going to call the person who wins. We're going to spin the wheel. I'm going to call them and you will have the...
Last time we did that, it didn't go as smoothly as possible.
Yes. You don't have to be 18 this time around, so I can send you on a flight. You can be any age to enter, but just Details in the pinned comment in the live chat on YouTube. Takes 15 seconds to enter your details, and then we'll go from there. So with that being said, let's begin. Ladies and gents in the chat, let's do this. Three words to summarize the game against the Crows. Lekdog, let's talk. Let's unpack it. What happened?
Well, we never got the buffer really that we normally rely on. And we kind of, so in other games where we've been close or trailing or whatever, you always go, well, Harry and Charlie haven't kicked their goals yet. It happened with in the Freo game. Charlie hasn't got involved yet. When he does, we'll get ahead and we'll win the game. They were keeping up with us offensively or leading us offensively. Charlie had kicked his goals. Harry had impacted the game, kicked a couple. We just couldn't get the buffer. And then when we finally did, there was, well, I don't remember how long there was. You keep saying that sort of 8 minute mark, so I'll use that as a frame of reference. At 8:50 minute mark, we sort of had our buffer, and then I don't know. I think we got complacent. I think the word I used earlier is the one I'm going to go with. I think we got defensively complacent and kind of assumed we had enough breathing room when there was still plenty of time left on the clock. And I mean, the fact that obviously they get ahead with a minute to go, we had an opportunity to go in and score, but their defense stood up when it needed to. I think we focused really hard on offense and stoppage and trying to get ahead in that stoppage, that center clearance stuff. And we kind of went away from what's been successful for us, which is that defensive two-way running. It was sort of one way. I think that's evident in the fact that 198 points were scored in the game. And yeah, I think we switched off a little bit at the end of the game. Or maybe we didn't have the run in our legs because we had the limited rotations, because we had the injuries, whatever the reason. We didn't play our game, I don't think.
Yeah. I very rarely after a loss do I watch the review and see the game in a completely different way and see things that I really didn't pick up during the game. I was not as aware of how off we were with our focus defensively. Now, whether that was because there was a zone or whatever it was, the reaction time of our key defenders, and I mean our senior defenders in, you know, Wiedering, McGovern, these types, there was misalignment happening. You go, I go, ball doesn't spill out over the boundary line in the fourth. They, you know, just little moments like that, uncharacteristic moments with no force in our back line. Uncharacteristic moments from really senior players. And yeah, I think focus for me was the theme of the day. And I think the way that we failed to execute defensively, coupled with the way in which we failed to be efficient forward of center. I mean, and then you pay the price. And if we got lucky last week against the Crows, it may have been because we were, you know, the magic of footy rewards you for being so great defensively. Whereas this time, that little magic, the way the ball bounces, doesn't go our way because we failed to execute the fundamentals for, I think, just too long.
Yeah. I think focus is a good one. I think communication, it's hard to know what the guys are saying from where we're sitting, but to me, there was a lot of, you know, Kemp running into Wiedering, Newey running into Blake Acres or whoever it was, a lot of spilled marks. I sort of thought Wieders was content with letting Tex Walker mark it sort of towards the boundary in what would traditionally be difficult spots to kick goals, but it's Tex Walker and he kicks goals against us. He kicks four. I'm not saying it's just Wiedering's fault, but there was just, it felt like we kind of accepted what the Crows, we let the Crows play the way they wanted to, and we just didn't have that urgency that I felt like we normally do. And it's highlighted in the fact they got quite a few over-the-top sort of Joe the Goose goals, but the fact that Ben Keys, who No other club in the AFL fears, yet whenever he plays us, he kicks four goals. The fact that we let that happen again says to me either we didn't plan it for it properly or we didn't execute, or the defenders didn't execute the plan. And by defenders, I don't just mean the back six. I mean sort of the defensive mids, the two-way running from everyone. Because if Ben Keys, who we knew as Carlton fans, was going to come in and kick three goals against, just despite the fact he kicks no goals against anyone else in the league, comes in and kicks three goals, something's gone wrong. It's like when we play Essendon and every single time Kyle Langford will kick three or four goals against us. It's like, and that to me stems from either a lack of planning or a lack of execution or both. And so that's why, great, I'm glad that we had 28 opportunities to score and kick. You know, we could have kicked 200 points if we wanted to, but it was 100% focus on the defensive end that did it for us.
Yeah. Where I'm not panicking or getting too concerned, maybe I'm just overconfident, but the fact of the matter is we generated plenty of opportunities to win the game and score at a really high clip. I don't think that was an issue. So put that to one side. I thought we actually cleaned up our stoppage game. I thought we were better at stoppage than what we had been. I just think we came up against a side that was so much more focused than us because, listen, I don't know how many subscribe to this theory, but any team that goes 0-5 to start a year in the AFL are probably not going to play fine. Like, you just make it so hard on yourself. So the Crows, you don't rule anything out because anything's possible, but you're pretty much done if you're 0-5. And so Adelaide played with every single fiber of their being for every second, knowing that it was a little bit of do or die. It was like a 98% do or die game. And putting that all together, like, had we only generated 14 scoring shots in the game, I would have been concerned. But the fact of the matter is, you generate 28 scoring shots, opportunities in a game, take away three or four because they were rushed, fair enough, 25 or more, you're in good shape offensively. And that's something that we haven't been able to say consistently enough with this club. Defensively, we've been a rock for a while. That's probably what's gotten us to this position where we've won more games than we've lost in the last, 17? So, you know, from time to time, you have an off day. Defensively was that day. And it just all compounded with the injuries and Saad and McGovern and Chera before the game. And, you know, it's footy.
Yeah. It is. And I think we know what we can do defensively, right? We can tighten that up. The players will get that drilled into them this week to tighten that up. I think potentially if you're going to give an out to the coaching staff, maybe they were trying something a little different to see what they can do offensively, because that's been the chatter, right? We're not scoring enough from clearances and stoppages or whatever the media is saying at this time. We showed we can score, and I'm with you. Part of the reason I'm not panicking, like, I'm more upset about our defensive side of the game. But as you said, if Owie's goal counts or whatever, we had the opportunity to win the game. We know we can generate scores. This tells me that while we can do it, it's probably not the way we want to play. We need a balance somewhere between last week and this week. And Adelaide executed. The other thing is, you're not just playing against yourselves. Adelaide executed what they wanted to do really well. They took us wide. They went over the top. They got those fast breaks again against us. And then they were really accurate in front of goal. And some of those goals were quite difficult. So they did what they wanted, and they got what they wanted out of the game. And as you said, Tez, that they were desperate to win it. And I think, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, I think one team ever has played finals after going 0-5. So you don't want to be in that position. Now they can start to build a bit of a run, and we come into a tough block of games.
Yeah. The Almost Blues Brothers have gifted 5 Blue Abroad memberships. Thank you very much, boys. I don't know how they get chosen, but I think it's something like the first 5 people in the list or whatever it is. But thank you very much, guys. This actually brings me to a point as well. I was watching them today. I caught up on the show today. First of all, I think that was the best show that they've ever done, the way that they spoke in general. Two things. One, the strength and conditioning conversation. Great conversation. Great way to bring it up in a balanced way. Number two, Joe brought up a heat map of the scoring shots. And this was the other fascinating part. I thought the scoring shots that we generated were some of the better scoring shots that we have seen in a while for us, particularly in the first half. Adelaide had some pretty difficult shots. I think 3 of them were outside 50 on an angle.
Tex had a couple of those from memory.
Yeah.
Maybe Brody Smith had one as well.
Yeah. So that's that, you know. I don't want to go through every moment here, but how am I going to do this?
What, is this the bit where we start panning Pitto, or is that later in the show?
Oh,
no, I'm absolutely trolling. I don't think people got my tweet when I sent that after the game. I can't believe Pitto's done this.
Yeah, well, okay, let's go there. Let's open up the discussion there. So What did you make of Pitto coming in? I think it was a shock to most of us. I did not see that coming, even if we knew Chera was sore after training on that Thursday.
Yeah, probably if you're looking for the like-for-like, he's obviously not a like-for-like for Chera, but I've been saying on the selection table and promising for weeks now that, like, at some point Pitto's going to come in. I was always told by my little birdies that it was going to be after our bye, and that, like, we're going to play him. He's probably not going to play every week, but we're going to play him, and I think it's matchup dependent, and I think him matching up against Riley O'Brien in hindsight probably isn't a surprise. I think they probably wanted to go in and do that anyway. Does having two ruckmen, because I don't think TDK has the forward nous to do it, hinder us? Yeah, probably. And I've been thinking about this all week. And by the way, I'm not going to criticize Pitto's game at all, because Pitto did Pitto things. He doesn't play full games. We know that. He gets hit outs. That's what he does. Like, that's all he does. He did exactly what he's being paid to do. So I don't really want to discuss him. It's more the philosophy of it. Here's my hot take. I don't think our premiership winning ruckman has played for us this year. So that's my hot take. I don't know if he's on the list. I don't know if he's at another club right now, but I don't think our premiership winning ruckman has played for us yet this year. That's my hot take. I don't know where that lands TDK. I don't think Pitto's going to be the main man. But, yeah, that's my hot take. I've got no issues with Pitto, but you can't run both, I don't think.
As in, you don't think either of them are the premiership ruckman?
Yeah. So I don't think Pitto will be, and I don't think TDK will be. I love what TDK has done this year, and he's been really good, and I'm still not convinced that he's going to be our number one ruckman. I am happy to be wrong. I know I'm going to get slated in the comments. I'm not even going to look. Mate, I just think that he doesn't. I don't think he's got the... I think he can be outbodied, and I think there is some fear that he can be outbodied, which is why Pitto played. I think they still want to find a balance for both. But unfortunately, TDK doesn't quite have the forward craft yet. I do think, as a world, and I've said this a million times, where he becomes sort of a pinch hitter that can also play behind the ball. Yeah. I think that'll happen one day in his career. Anyway, we don't need to focus too much on the future. I think they're going to keep going with two ruckman, and it'll be matchup dependent. So who have we got this week? We got GWS. They've got Kieran Briggs if he's healthy. I think Pitto probably stays in. He probably big stays bad, in.
Big, bad, bruising, bustling Kieran Briggs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Look, it hurts. This goes to a whole discussion of balance and the list profile, right? Right now, with the injuries that we're going to go into next week with and the injuries we already had, 2 years ago, our season's over. Right now, we're hanging on. We're 4-1, and we're going into a really tough block of games where we're going to lose games and probably due to lack of availability. But we have built the list to the point where we still have a really strong 23 players that are available to us and can fulfill roles. A couple of years ago, as I said, with these injuries, the season's over. So we're going to see Pitto and TDK play because we just don't have that many fit blokes to choose from at the moment. And then we can talk about, you know, all the other injuries, but they're going to have to find a way to make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, I definitely felt there was a better balanced profile of the team, but like I said earlier, didn't defend well enough around the ground, didn't defend well enough in our matchups behind the ball, didn't cover well enough there, and didn't, you know, we're not accurate enough in front of goal in the second half. So that's that. But I definitely felt a more balanced side. The other thing to note that I noticed, so going into the game, Riley O'Brien was the number one ruckman in the league when it came to hit outs and, you know, his dominance at stoppage, which is fascinating because Adelaide were in the predicament that they were in. Then there was the other thing I noticed. Tom De Koning completely wrapped up on that right leg. So was he sore? I don't know. Who knows? But the fact that he didn't have that much strapping on his right leg last week and did have it going into this game kind of made me believe that he was going into the game a little sore. And that's why we have Pitto on the list for these exact moments.
No, 100%. Pitto is 100% on the list to be a backup ruck, but he will play, if I was going to randomly pick a number, half the games. And TDK will play some of those games and he'll miss some of those games through injury or soreness or rest. Pitto's going to play. And as you said, it's sort of, we shored up our clearances a bit, although the quality of those clearances is questionable because a lot of time it went back over our heads. But we did sort of address in a way that part of the ground. And as I said, we need to sort of work around it. TDK is going to get sore. There's very few ruckmen who can run out the full year and be successful at doing it. Max Gawn, I mean, he always misses one or two games. He's one of the few that can seemingly just because he's a mammoth human being, he can kind of push through. But yeah, TDK, whether he was sore or not, he's been really good this year, but he has still been beaten quite severely at times. He's not the finished product. And as I said, I think if you're looking for the perfect ruckman, they're not on our list.
Yep. Fair. Well, that might open up a chat later on in the year.
I know. I've got plenty of ruck content.
Okay. So that's that conversation. What else came up in this game for you?
I don't love the, and I put a tweet out of this before the game, just to gauge people's feelings. I don't love the, and admittedly with all the changes, the late changes, it kind of skewed the results, but I don't love the having a small forward as a sub and rotating them through and not really knowing who our small forwards are. I'm not saying I want all of our players to succeed. I really do. I didn't like the Horatio Fantasia signing last year because I thought it's that classic NBA thing. If you give a coach a vet, he's going to play the vet over the rookie. It happens in every NBA team to the point where they have to trade out the vets so the coach plays the young guys. Horatio's played every game for us. He's too good for VFL. He can't learn from it, but he's not impacting. I just want them to say, hey, Motlop, Durds, you're out, or whoever it is, Motlop, always, you're our two main guys, Dirge, you're the third, or Fantasia, you're the third. I just want clear, concise, defined roles for those guys, whereas at the moment I feel like we're kind of half pregnant with them. And I think you might have talked about this in this prior stream to this, but if we're going to play Horatio Fantasia, he was successful as a small forward who could generate opportunities out of nothing. Let's play him there rather than this weird hybrid high forward thing where he's just not impacting. He had one good run on the wing and he did kick a goal. But outside of that, I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah. I'm surprised doing the rating show with Pommy, looking at the heat maps, I'm surprised to see him playing up the ground in the way he is. I suppose he is playing something that resembles the Jack Martin role. And so I get that. There was an interesting passage of play. Well, the Owies goal that was ruled touched, which was ruled insufficient evidence, whatever. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to complain about it because like it happened to, we got the other end of it the week before. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is during the broadcast, the commentator said, that's the first forward 50 crumb for Carlton for the game. And so I hear that. I'm like, that's interesting. Fantasia's playing half forward. Up the ground. So, yeah, I don't know what the plan is. I don't know what they're doing. I'm sure they have it all figured out and they know more than what I do.
Oh, for sure. But
when I pictured Fantasia, I pictured him crumbing the ball and being in the positions that we were a bit complaining about towards the back end of last year. Like our smalls are just a little inexperienced and haven't got their timing right. So,
well, yeah. And look, he didn't get a tackle inside 50. I know that's probably because he was further up the ground, but Durds is that really his thing. He's going to get tackles inside 50. He's a defensive beast. And sometimes he might get a goal or two. Matt Owies is that. He's a small forward, but he's not a small crumbing pressure forward, really. He's like a small marking forward, like in the same way that when Jack Martin's in the forward line, he's a key forward, but he's just short. He's a marking forward, right? To me, Orazio should be doing the Fantasia role, which is the traditional crumbing forward, because I think that's where he can impact. But they Vossi knows him. He must need to be engaged, must need to feel the ball in his hand, and that's probably why they're pushing him up the ground. But I just want to – that portion of the ground, it should be so devastating when you've got Harry and Charlie and TDK or Elijah Hollands or whoever it is at that point in time, the forward. This should like there should be no one on these blokes. They should just be able to get the ball and dribble it through Ben Keyes style. It shouldn't be that hard for them, but we just haven't quite nailed that still, and that's probably a slight concern, which is funny because we had 28 scoring shots.
Yeah. Well, how much of what we have just spoken about, rectifying it, how much better do you think we will be? Because I feel like had we won the game, we're probably not talking about this too much. And these issues have probably still been there the first four wins that we've had. But maybe because we've won, you can maybe get sucked into glossing over. How much do you think we are better rectifying what we just spoke about?
That's a good question. I think, look, I think largely, right, if because they all kicked a goal each, the three smalls. I think that if you're getting that from them every week, it's actually a good thing. But the fact that none of them came from crumbing and there was minimal pressure as compared to other games, minimal tackles, because tackles generate opportunities. We talked about this before with Pommy. Matt always doesn't, or Corey Durden, whoever it is, he doesn't get a goal assist when he tackles someone and the ball spills out and then Charlie kicks it off the ground, right? So it's a combination of things. I think we can be better. And it might not come in the way of actual goal tally for those three players, but it might be in the way that they're generating their goals or the way that they're generating pressure that creates goals for other people. I don't like the fact that we're still feels like we're relying on kick it long, Harry or Charlie or mark it, and if they don't, well, hopefully we tackle enough that the ball stays in, which it didn't against Adelaide. I think we can improve, but the goal tally might actually stay the same. I just think it's the way we're generating our goals isn't terribly sustainable for me.
Yeah. Do you have any key moments in the game, good or bad, that you remember that stick out in your mind? I mean, I think we can all remember the bad ones, but
I mean, there's a couple of
defining moments.
There's a couple of annoying ones. That spilled mark on the boundary in defense, sort of in the pocket where Kemp didn't, I'm not blaming Kemp, but kind of bounced off him because he wasn't sure if him or Weeders were going to go for the mark, or I think it was him and Weeders, or it might have been him and Newman.
Williams.
Yeah, they're just kind of no one went for it. There's a couple moments, as I said earlier in the stream, where Weeders didn't quite take that extra step to follow Tex, and he gets the mark, and Weeders is probably like, well, you know, he's 50 out on an angle. It's a fine shot to allow, and then he kicks four of them. I loved Orazio's, I touched on it before, speaking of Orazio, I loved his little run along the wing. I think Cripper and George Hewitt just keep showing us why they're so valuable, just with their consistency and their ability to, George Hewitt, particularly in that last quarter, just kept finding a way when we were fighting to get back in the game and, you know, not lose it because you could feel the momentum was going the other way. I think it was in our forward, sort of half forward for us, on the opposite side to where the cameras sit. And George Hill just kept willed himself to sort of two or three contests and then got a couple of inside 50s. Then he took that mark and lined up for goal, which, you know, he kicks higher than he kicks further. So he was never going to go for it. But I just think he continued to show us his awesome effort. I love every time Harry goes up the wing and takes contested marks. A few of them didn't stick this week, but he's just a beast. Like all the signature pieces were there. We were just like a step off every time, and that's all it takes to lose the game.
Yeah. You said something earlier where you sort of sat there calm. I did as well. I enjoyed the game for the most part. My first red flag, which having watched the replay, there were red flags from the first contest. Ben Key's first goal was a red flag.
Yeah.
having looked back at it now, because Gov just, for whatever reason, he and Williams didn't have this alignment on who was engaging and who was going up for the spoil. So that was probably the red flag in hindsight. But Wiedering's one that I never worry about ever because he reads the ball so well. He's strong one-on-one. The positioning's elite. 3:58 to go in the third. He pushes Tex in the side legally to create some space as the ball's coming in. Times it wonderfully. I thought, perfect. He's going to gobble this up. And then I don't know what happened, but he just found himself under the ball. And I was like, that is so uncharacteristic. Mm. And I think that was the first moment where I thought, geez, like, that's just not him. And I wonder if we're going to be made to pay for something like that. And he had a few contests like that. A few of them did, just misreading the ball. And then the last passage of play, before Owies, you know, was in his head a little bit and you know, doesn't register a score, I thought Harry was clearly marking the ball. To be fair, I was on the other side of the ground.
Yeah, so was I was sitting near you. I thought he marked it. Like, I was just like, oh, great, bang, I was up and about.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the speed factor was perfect. Walsh gets that perfect ball out. I'm like, this is great. Harry's going to go and dob it, run around the corner. It was a perfect angle for it. And then I think in there I remembered when Charlie kicked the goal on his left to put us up by 16 points with 8 minutes 50, I went the early crow. I messaged my group chat and I basically said in capitals, we've done it. We've withstood their best and we've shoved it back up their ass. And then as they kicked their next goal, the Crows, I started messaging back, trying to like reverse the karma. Too late.
Too late, mate. You can't be doing that shit. The funny thing is, right, we talk about we're a step off. I think another like red flag, and this is a credit to him, to where he's come from, Matt Cottrell misses that set shot. And I was like, I'd put it in my book. You know, he kicked one and then he had one pretty much straight in front. I was just like, oh, Cottrell with the calming goal and he missed it. And I was kind of like, that's not ideal. But then we got lucky. Well, not lucky, but like Mark Pitnett kicked a goal. When was the last time Mark Pitnett kicked a goal, you know?
2021.
He was, and it was a little like scrummy sort of off the ground goal. So like things went our way. Like we had every opportunity to win the game and that's in the, you can see that in the scoreline. But yeah, I just felt, as I said, I wasn't stressed, but I kind of just thought at some point we're just gonna finish the game, and we just didn't.
Well, that brings me to my next point. Now, look, what we're about to talk about, it's out of our control, but just to add insult to injury, no pun intended, Saad and McGovern both go up with hammies. We saw Saad happen right in front of us. I saw the separation between he and Rankine. I saw how far away Rankine was, and I saw Saad just like try and catch him and pop. There it went
straight away. Yeah.
Did you see McGovern's do his? Because even in the replay, I didn't find where it happened.
I have no idea when or where he injured himself. To be honest with you, most of the time when he jumps or runs, I've assumed he's injured himself. It's just the way his body moves. So no, look, I'm not sure when he hurt himself. I was pretty sad to see that at the end of the game when I was sort of reading through Twitter and stuff like that. And then I don't know, is Jack Carroll all right? He got the bump. Is he all right? Do we know yet? Or is that?
Nah, well, I was hoping that, I mean, I knew that the Carlton website wouldn't have an updated injury list because they don't usually come out until Tuesday-ish. But the AFL website usually has an updated injury list, sometimes on a Monday. They don't. So I don't see anything new here. But, I mean, you lose three guys in the space of a couple of days.
Plus Chera,
Chera, Saad, McGovern. Chincotta was managed for VFL.
And some people are saying that that's an injury. Some people are saying that it's not. So we'll have to wait and see on that one, I suppose.
I don't see how managing someone 6 days out from a, well, you know, a week before an AFL game in the VFL is to get him ready for the AFL, personally.
Yeah, it's a strange one. So I'm going to assume that he's injured as a safety mechanism. Yeah. And Tez, you add to that list all the other guys, so I can't even think off the top of my head. You got your Jack Martins, your Jack Silvani, Sam Doherty's, you add that. Everyone has injury lists. And we've got a big one, but I think it is a credit to Nick Austin and the team that this would have crippled us, literally crippled us a couple of years ago, and the season would have been over. We're still able to pull guys from the reserves and elevate guys and move guys around to the point where I think we'll be able to cover them. So if that's the discussion you want to have, I think the first thing we need to do is talk about Jordan Boyd, because he now gets an opportunity. If he wasn't already being, and I wrote about him in my article for Code Sports this week, if he wasn't already having an opportunity to show the world how good he is and how good he's been for us, he does now. So I think he will get the Sardi sort of running, maybe a bit more offensive role. So some people suggest Zach Williams will go forward, but I think they'll end up just bringing in Marchbank and Cowan. Marchbank to replace replace Mitch McGovern, or allow Wiedering to replace Mitch McGovern. And then Cowan will come in sort of as that. He can kind of do it all. He can play tall. He can play small. As a junior, he was a half backer with a lethal boot. For us, he's been more of a lockdown defender. So I think Cowan and Boyd elevating his role will be the key cog to surviving this next little bit. The midfield's a little bit harder.
Do you know where my mind goes to now that I don't know how everyone views this injury list that we've got, whether it's, the straw that breaks the camel's back or critical mass, however you describe it. I'm excited because I think I don't want injuries. I hate having injuries. I hate seeing guys get injured at fucking training. Like, it's crazy. But you can sit here and mope about it. All of a sudden, we're going to see Cowan potentially. All of a sudden, we're going to really see what the list is made of. I mean, last year it proved the test. Do we have a deep enough list to cover for injuries to get us to a point where we can contend for a premiership? The answer was yes. That doesn't mean it's going to happen this year. But the reality is the test of 2024 and the challenge of 2024, hello and welcome. It's arrived. This is it. It's right here. Like, we're alive now. We're awake. Now it's a true test of the list. Now these guys who many of us wanted to see play and have their opportunity get to play. We'll see, Lewis Young, I'm sure, will get thrown up at some point. Marchbank's going to come back. I don't know if he'll play this week or next week, whatever. Bins is another one that we'll see over this stretch. Moya got injured. Wilson got injured. We probably won't see them because they're hurt. But let's find out what we've got. We'll find out. The list has to be 30 deep. And we've talked about having a list 30 deep, but now we're going to find out. And we get to do it against the best teams in the competition in the next 5 weeks. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sink or swim sort of situation. What excites me is someone like Matt Kennedy, who I know you guys spoke about in the rating show, who I talked about in my article today. He kind of suffered from, he finally got some mid time with Chariot, and it's like, fuck, he's good. And then we had a few injuries, and then they threw him behind the ball, and then they threw him up forward. It was kind of like, what's he doing? But he now is, to me, the clear, just like he goes into the midfield and it's Hewitt, Kennedy, Cripps, Walsh. They're your big four. That's where he plays his best footy. That's what he's done his entire career. For us, he's been really flexible and it's worked. We move him back into the midfield. I'm actually not that worried about the midfield. It's sort of, there's probably one, and I know Zach Williams is being thrown up as an option to go into the mids, and he's certainly an option to go in the mids. I'm not sure quite if he's there yet. I think we'll see it in moments, but he's just starting to get his sort of dash and dare back the last couple of weeks. He's had moments. But for me, the exciting thing is sort of, how are we going to fill this forward role? How are we going to fill this forward line? Is Jack Carroll going to step up again, come off the sub list and become a permanent contributor? Like, there's plenty of opportunities, and we do still have depth. And to have guys like, Caleb Marchbank, who, as you said, he might not come in this week, but he'll be in the pitch. To have him as someone who's like a luxury depth player for us, and even Lewis Young, who was really good the first couple of weeks. Like, we're going to find out pretty quickly how deep it runs, but I think we're deep. I think we're deep.
I agree. I mean, I'll put this up. This was from last week. This was last week's injury list. So obviously, that you got to add a few to this list. Sorry, one sec. This was from April 9th, a week ago. So Carroll's not a factor here because it's indefinite. He probably wouldn't play as it is. Cunningham, 1 to 2 weeks. That was last week. He, a week away. Doc, done. Fogarty, I don't know. I don't know where that's at. I don't know if that was a 1 weeker or a 4 week, 6 weeker. Elijah obviously came back in. Marchie, fingers crossed. Jack Martin, still a month away based on this. Motlop, a lot of people have said, why didn't Motlop play? That's why he didn't play. That's why. Silvani. So we're going to add Saad, McGovern, Chera, Wilson, and Ashton Moyer to this list. So we're here. We're here. We're in double-digit injury numbers in round six. It's just the...
You'd rather have him now than at the end of the season, to be honest. So it's, if you're going to have injuries, now's the time to do it, particularly when you've banked a few wins, 4-1. We've got, Young, Cowan, Marchbank, if he's fit, Binns. We will see Binns over the next few weeks. Yes. Binns will play, I'm telling you now. And he might not be up to it, but I suspect he's going to be a really tasty little morsel for everyone who likes Jack Carroll and Ollie Hollins and those sort of guys. I'm excited. Like, again, this would have broken me a while ago, but like, I'm just at a point where it's like, it's another opportunity. And I feel like we're playing better. We're getting more out of guys the first couple of weeks when we didn't have your Wieterings and stuff in the team and people were playing to prove themselves. Well, now they get the opportunity to do it again.
Yeah. We're going to find out who's going to be a part of the future of the club.
And yeah, true.
I think what we've seen over the last few years, well, what we've learned over the last few years is don't call it in round six, don't call it over in round 12, and certainly don't call it over in round 18 because you don't know. There's one. And then number two, had we not had some injuries to some of these guys on the field, we don't get to see Jordan Boyd. We don't even know about him. Chincotta. We don't even know about Chincotta if Zach Williams doesn't get hurt and we don't replace him on the list with someone. So there's always opportunity for someone. I don't think it's doom and gloom. And I just think look, I would much rather not have this injury list. I would much rather have everyone available 24 to 26 times a year. But you're playing the most brutal game in the world and it sucks.
Yeah.
You have a choice. How are you going to react to it? So that's that. Let's talk about this week because same time, same place, same day. I'm assuming you'll be in the same seats.
I'll be in different seats unless Timmy's going to hook me up again. I'll be in my normal boundary seats.
Okay. Very good.
On the opposite wing, where I normally get on camera abusing the umpires and feel silly about myself.
Let's do something practical. Rather than looking at the next 5 weeks and how hard it's going to be, why don't we look at this Saturday and start there? Put all our focus onto this Saturday.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. The GWS are good. They did lose Sam Taylor, I believe it was. I'm just trying to double check I'm not confused with someone else. Yep. Sam Taylor on the weekend, who's really vital for them. And we always kick it directly to him. Like him not being there, well, you want to come up against the best opponents, but he's going to hurt them. Canelio went down with injury, but apparently it's not that bad, or he's dead. It's somewhere in between those two things. But they're a good team. And Tez, they're sort of similar in a way to us in that they've got some A-list superstar names that are performing better than they have in previous years, Whitfields and your Tom Greens and that sort of stuff. But they've also got a lot of job doers like Brent Daniels and things like that. And they're a really well-drilled football team. They remind me of us, to be honest. They remind me of us. They're very similar to us in the way they play.
Can I just bring something up about the Giants? The fap town going on about the Giants from our supporters, like we can't win this week, is baffling to me. Had we played the teams that they had, which include North Melbourne and West Coast, we would be out for, I don't know. I just think they are not unbeatable and they are not this. They are a really well-drilled side, as you said. They got good players all around the field. They are not the invincible team that they are being made out to be. And they are so beatable this week, even with all the injuries that we have. And I don't understand why there is this fear factor again. I mean, again, good team, don't get me wrong, but they're not unbeatable. Yeah. And I'm already reading like the comments around it can't be done this week. We're probably going to lose our next three. Like, it's like,
yeah, well, yeah, what? That's, I mean, we beat them last year, earlier in the year. We obviously lost the game. We essentially tanked that game at the end of the year. Was it them? Yeah, it was. They beat us 105-73, but that was when we'd already locked in finals. And I believe we rested a few players. I can't remember, but no, they're beatable. They're absolutely, as I said, they're similar to us. They've got a lot of job doers in their team, which means, yeah, of course, they can be beaten. I think Jesse Hogan's been in good form, but he's not sort of, you know, going to tear us apart with guys like Wiedering playing on him. You know, we fear guys like Toby Green. They're small forwards they're the types of players that we saw on the weekend that can get on top of us. But we can dictate how this game goes. We can either dictate that it's going to be a high-scoring, fluid game like the Adelaide one was, which we'll probably lose if we play that game, or we can do what we're good at, and that's be a pressure, contested tackle, and that's an attitude thing. That's a mindset thing, not a skill thing.
Yeah.
So these guys are beatable for sure. Like, there's no reason to think that we can't beat them, even with, you know, Saad and Gov out.
Yeah. They're undefeated, so well done.
Yeah.
Fair play. They nearly threw it away last week.
Yeah, against the Saints. St. Kilda.
Oh, wow. what I like about them a lot is their running power. Very impressive. And so when you look at team selection for this week, where does your mind go to?
I mean, we're relatively limited to what we can bring to the table this week. I think Jackson Binns will come in, I think, to give us that two-way running. The question will be whether they run with Pitto and TDK again, if they want Pitto against Briggs. I think that's going to be the core discussion for us. On their side, they'll get, pretty sure they'll bring Callum Ward back in. He dominated in the VFL. He had about 47,000 disposals. So I imagine they'll bring him back in and maybe make one other defensive change for Sam Taylor. But they'll be relatively unchanged. So, you know, as you said, we are a good running team. We didn't do it on the weekend. We've got Blake Akers, who's maybe not for last week, but he's the best defensive wing in the game. We've got Ollie Hollins, who runs all day. I know people criticize his lack of disposals. We've got Sam Walsh, who's a running beast. We've even got Paddy Cripps now running both ways. We've got, like, we can match them in that department given we apply ourselves. So I think that's the big question. If we go in with the same attitude, and I'm speaking as if I know what the attitude of the players was, my perception of what the attitude was against Adelaide, that GWS will beat us. But if we go in and take them seriously, I don't really think it matters who we put on the park. I think our game style,
yeah,
can generate pretty good results for us.
Yeah. I would like, I watched most of the VFL. They lost 1 point thriller. Really pleased to see the signs that I saw from young Lockie Cowan, who for whatever reason probably slid under the radar a bit, probably because seemingly there were so many ahead of him. So I wouldn't mind seeing him and or Lewis Young to shore up the defense, yep, which would allow Boyd to play a bit with a bit more flair. Maybe you release Zach Williams a little bit more. I'll tell you what else I want to see this week. I want to see Charlie Curnow have 4 tackles in the game. That's what I want to see.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. And by the way, just if I was picking the team, Lewis Young would be in it. I just still think there's a thing where they don't want to play Wiedering and Young in the same team. I think Cowan will play. Let's talk about Charlie, because he's fucking really good at football. And he kicks a lot of goals and he takes a lot of marks. And I'm really excited for him. And I love that he gets free kicks because players are scared to defend him. We can't apply defensive pressure if not everyone's applying defensive pressure, and he doesn't do it, and he hasn't done it this year, really. And I really don't like it when he just kind of sits on the ground, or is slow to get up, or he just kind of and rightly so, because it happens a lot, he expects every call to go his way. But the times when it doesn't, I really need him to just kind of goldfish Ted Lasso, forget about it, get back into the action rather than kind of sit in the ground for 10 seconds kind of, you know, looking into the sky, which he does do. And I hate criticizing because he's an absolute jet, but we got to hold everyone to the same standards, right?
Well, what I saw this week was commentary going straight to guys like Owies, guys like Ollie Hollins, you hold everyone to the same standard, but obviously you have leaders. Charlie's a leader of the club. Yes. Charlie's magic. Charlie, we ask a lot of him. He does a lot for us. He provides
does
a lot
more than we ask him for.
Correct.
He's a beast.
He's well aware. And if he's not, maybe someone should tell him. If he buys in to the defensive side of the game with that manic hunger, it will rub off on them in a way that maybe he doesn't even realize. He had a shank which set up Corey Durden's goal. And I remember it happening thinking,
yes,
Charlie can shank the fucking ball and something good will still happen. There's something about him. He's a spiritual being on the field. And I know that might sound a bit ridiculous, but I really do believe something just magic happens when he gets the ball. And I want to see him apply himself like never before this week defensively. One tackle per quarter, 4 in the game. I think it'll rub off on the team and it'll lift the rest of them around him, particularly in the forward half. And I don't know. I just think we can beat the Giants this week if we just lock in.
Yeah, I think so. And these numbers are a little skewed because Harry obviously plays up the ground a bit around the ball, but Harry's averaging 3.4 tackles, 1.4 inside 50, which is elite for a key forward, and 8.4 pressure acts, which is average for a key forward. Charlie averages one tackle a game, which is below average, one tackle inside 50, which is above average, and then only 6 pressure acts. I just want him, and I know we ask so much, and we put him behind the ball, and he takes game-saving marks,
yeah.
and he's awesome, and he's the best player maybe in the competition. I know they're discussing Jeremy Cameron is, but just look like you're going to tackle, please. Just look like you're applying a little bit of pressure, and I promise you, Charlie, you're not going to have to work it hard for your 4 goals. You're going to get 5 or 6. You're going to get the little cheapies. You're going to get the little on-the-ground ones. You are going to benefit you.
Yeah. Nathan, you're with me. I remember when Feb started buying into it. He started getting the rewards. I don't know if it's a magic lala. I don't know what it is. There's something about the game rewarding you when you do the little things, the chase downs, the tackles. I think Harry was a beneficiary of that, and to be honest, has been a beneficiary of that this season because he's
Harry's good below his legs, below his knees. He's good.
Yeah.
For a guy that's however tall he is, 200 and whatever it is, centimeters tall.
Yep. So that's that. I'm pumped for this Saturday. Bit of a response. It's the first response off a loss. So you don't let one become two. We saw last year what can happen if you sort of let it start compounding. So it's really important to come out firing this week. And yeah.
No, I'm excited. I'm very excited for this game. It's going to be massive.
Yeah.
Did we need to do votes for the game? I think it's pretty obvious who got the votes, but
You know what? Nah.
I think we all know who got the votes.
Nah. Let's move on.
Let's do it.
There's a few things about this week. First of all, we had 46,000 there last week, which was solid. Return your ticket via the app if you're not going to the game. Just log in and return it and it'll go on the market. Someone will buy it. Got to fill that place out. Have to. So there's that. Also, this Thursday, we have the team show and we have an announcement. We have a brand new sponsor, Mr. Cabinets.
What do they do, Terry?
They make cabinets, mate.
Oh,
northern suburbs, born and bred, down in Thomastown, back in my neck of the hood. So, long story short, we have a new sponsor for the team show, and to celebrate, we're giving away 2 tickets, premium tickets, level 2, to the game this Saturday. So I saw somebody in the rating stream ask for two tickets. This is your opportunity. All you need to do is in on YouTube. The link is in the live chat. I will also put it in the description if you're watching this after. All you need to do is just fill in your details. We're after your name, your email, and your phone number. So we can transfer the ticket. And so I can call the person live on Thursday here on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. We're going to spin the wheel and I'm going to call you live and give you your tickets live on stream. So to enter, just enter your details and we'll go from there. So very, very exciting. Lekdog.
Hello.
What's happening this week for you?
That's a great question. In terms of public consumption stuff, an article went up today on Code Sports. It's the draft, the weekly waiver wire thing. I think you need a subscription to Code Sports to see it. I don't think a subscription to Herald Sun works. Not really sure. I just send them the writing and they tell me where it is. So you can check that out. I'll also be on Wednesday night. I'll be on Pom's channel for team selection. And I dropped a video last night on my YouTube channel. So if you want to see me paint models and talk about something I'm quite passionate about, head over to Alexi Does on YouTube, which, you know, you'll find me. Or if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see it there. Other than that, Tez, there's not too much that will be publicly consumed. A lot of the stuff I'm working on at the moment will come out later on, not now.
Fantastic. Well, make sure you go and check that out. Tomorrow night here on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel, it's episode 2 of Footy Abroad. This week, we've got Druzy, Fremantle supporter. Very brave, to be fair to him, to be coming onto the show after their last few weeks. Hopefully, we get a mature Druzy, not a Suki Lala, Frio, woe is me, the world's out to get me. Druzy, but he's a great man. So tomorrow night, 8 p.m. here, it's also streamed on the other three YouTube channels. So it'll be streamed live on Druzy's channel, on Swoop Luke's channel, and on Saints TV with Jake. So as always, need you here to provide the BA support. So that'll be tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Looking forward to it. Lekdog, thanks for being here tonight. Always love chatting with you.
No, mate, thank you for having me. It's a bloody pleasure.
And ladies and gents, good night. Stay safe. And as always, go Blues.
Up the Baggers!
Up the Baggers! Come on, mate.
Go to bed.